Here in the studio with us, Hannah Combs and Jen Plummer from the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. Hannah Combs is the executive director and Jen Plummer is the... What is your title, Jen?
I'm on the board. Okay. So I'm one of the board of directors, and I'm the fundraising chair.
Fundraising chair. Well, okay. And this is a different arrangement than last time the two of you were here.
Yes. It's very interesting how that happened. I actually was hired on, I loved it, hired on as the ED at the museum after I left Kinder, actually after Kinderhaven Group Home had to close. And it was revealed to me within the first few weeks of being at the museum that the museum already had its executive director right in its midst.
Oh, no.
And no, really, it was very, very evident. And Hannah's, I mean, passion, this is her work. And she was meant to do it. And it was just perfect because I feel like being chair of the fundraising committee is a great fit for me. So win-win.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think without the few months that I got to spend with Jen, I would have had the confidence or understood that this is where I was meant to be. So I really appreciate your guidance over those months.
Well, thank you. It's a great situation.
The museum was without an executive director for quite a while, a formal executive director, right? And it ran, seemed to me to run pretty smoothly during that time. So I'm not surprised that it...
Yeah, we had about a four-month transition, and we just wanted to wait and make sure we found the right person, which I think is usually the best approach in those times.
Well,
we have a list here of talking points, don't we?
We have a lot coming up at the museum. Really exciting stuff to talk about. So thanks for having us on again.
Yeah, you betcha. Anytime.
What comes our way first? What's the next thing on the agenda?
Yeah, so we have been working on a really cool partnership with The Hive. As many of you know, The Hive reopened last year to events. And if you've been to any of them, that same fun atmosphere is back under new management. So we've been working with Joe Pettiferri and Mac Diebel at The Hive, and they have been great. They actually came to us and said, hey, we want to do more community events here. Do you guys have anything that we could collaborate on together? And the first thing that came to mind was this program that the museum has become fairly well known for called Drink in History. So it is what it sounds like. You're going to learn a lot about history, and you're also going to have a bar available. And we've done this in a few different formats. We've done it as sort of a pub crawl where we go to four or five different locations. We did a successful one in 2021 with McDuff's at their new location at the Federal Building, where Mickey and Duffy walked us through their whole process of the historic preservation efforts they did there. And so now we're trying out a new format at The Hive with Joe and Mac that we're really excited about. In the past, we've only been able to have a capacity of 30 people at the Drink in History events. Because of the size of the venue at The Hive, we will be able to have up to 250 people there. So we're not exactly expecting a crowd that large, but we're very excited to be able to grow the event from that original 30-person capacity.
What's the date?
Yeah, so this first one we're doing will be next Saturday, April 29th. And this is sort of our, it's not an evening event necessarily. The doors will be opening at 2:30 in the afternoon. The program will go on at 3:30 and last till somewhere between 5 and 5:30, and then there will be a social hour to follow that. And the way this one will work is we will have seating. There will be I will be speaking, and we will also have a guest speaker.
About drink or about history?
About history. So the drinks will be present, but the history will still be the focus. So we are welcoming guest speaker Will Valentine, and we are going to do a presentation called The Real Hangtown and Other Apocryphal Railroad History.
Whoa.
So this is designed.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, this is designed. I think our hardcore rail fans in the community will enjoy it, but this is designed for a broader audience. So you don't have to know anything about railroads coming into this. We'll be telling some of the more entertaining and strange anecdotes that are related to history, or related to railroads.
Is this family friendly in terms of if you have, let's say, a junior high school student who's interested in railways?
You know, that's something that we are working on. But okay, at this point, the Hive is 21 and up. So,
okay, gotcha.
And because the bar, the full bar will be open, it will be 21 and up with no minors allowed entry.
And where can one get tickets?
Yeah, the only place you can get tickets is on the museum website, which is at bonnercountyhistory.org. If you go there, our homepage of the website has a big banner on it. You can click on that and buy your tickets. We will also have tickets available at the door.
Again, this is the last Saturday in April, April 29th, from 2:30.
So the doors open at 2:30. The
doors open at 2:30.
Gotcha. Program starts at 3:30.
Okay, yeah. Wonderful. And now, is this, you said it's the first one for this year. Is there going to be more this year, or?
We are tentatively planning a series of four for this year.
Oh. So,
yeah. So keep
lots
your
of history
eye out.
And lots of drink.
Cool. Yes. Yeah. And the title is kind of fun. We called it The Real Hangtown because that's a term that a lot of people have heard of, but the real story behind it is a little bit different than what you might assume. Just from
so Sandpoint was one time nicknamed.
That's the legend that Sandpoint had this name of Hangtown, and the legend is that.
Oh, don't give too much so okay. that people come.
It's just a teaser, yeah. But
yeah,
the real story is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And will there be slides? Will there be PowerPoint? Will there be...
Yeah, that's actually something we're really excited about with the Hive as the venue, because they have, if you've been in there, you know they have a world-class technical setup.
Exactly, so
they do. They have amazing, huge screens inside that we can show historic photos on. We can share maps. And then the sound and lighting system in there is superb as well. So it will be a well-produced experience.
It's nice to see life again at the Hive. It was dark for quite a while.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. It's a big building to be dark for that long, too.
And it's a fun building.
Yeah.
It's a fun building.
We saw the Grateful Dead there.
The Grateful Dead. I caught it. I caught the March 4th marching band. And I remember a cover band for the Talking Heads there, which absolutely out of Portland.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They've got a Fleetwood Mac cover band coming May 10th. Just all sorts of fun things.
It says here that there is a signature themed cocktail at the event.
Ooh.
Do you have a name of the cocktail yet?
I don't yet. We're leaving that up to the,
mixologists
at the Hive. So they said they would come up with something special for us, and I can't wait to see what their
Hangtown,
their railroad.
Mm-hmm.
I assure you it will taste better than anything you could have actually had on a historic railroad back in the day.
What fun. So again, tickets are available at the website.
BonnerCountyHistory.org.
And at the door, the last Saturday in April, April 29th, doors open at 2:30. Event begins at 3:30 and goes on till about 6:30.
The social hour will go till about 6.
Yeah, about 6. Cool. It sounds like a neat idea, and I hope that there'll be more.
Yes, that's the plan.
What's coming up next? What's after the 29th? What's your next?
Well, we are really excited about Gary Eller. Gary Eller is coming to town on May 5th, and he has basically been working on a passion project for pre-radio era Idaho songs, songs that you just cannot find recordings of, whether it was just people that wrote stories about their life, their work, all Idaho. He has 19, I believe, 19 total projects of pre-radio era songs throughout the state of Idaho. And specifically, he has, I believe, 37 tracks that are just related to our North Idaho up here, whether it's Lake Ponderay, whether it's the work, the logging, the ferries, you know, whatever it is. And we are thrilled. This is a passion project. It is free to the public. You know, Gary just tours once a year all over the state. And we are lucky enough at the museum that he is adding Sandpoint to his tour schedule. So that is on May 5th at 7 p.m.
That's a Friday.
That's a Friday. It's Cinco de Mayo. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right there in between your Cinco de Mayo plans, come to the Little Theater at the Music Conservatory, 7 p.m. And it's about an hour-long concert. I think Gary also gives some time for questions and answers. It also has a slideshow PowerPoint. And I think it's going to be a really, really great time.
Is this in the Little Carnegie?
It is.
Perfect. And if you haven't been over there to experience that space, wouldn't you agree?
It's very cool.
It is really cool. And again, this is Friday, May 5th. At 7?
At 7 p.m.
And it'll last about an hour.
It'll last about an hour. I don't think you're going to find anything like it. You know, if you are interested in Idaho history, if you're interested in folk music, it's going to be a blast. So please come on out and join us.
And are there tickets to it, or is it first come, first serve?
It is free, so it will be first come, first serve. We are grateful to the Music Conservatory for co-presenting this event with us.
At the corner of 2nd and Main.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen, the Little Carnegie is where the fire trucks would go in. And
Exactly. And we actually did a mini exhibit with MCS last year
that
tells the history of the fire department in that space. So those panels will be up as well if you're interested in that history.
What fun. So again, the 5th, Friday. Ooh, that's two Fs. Mm-hmm. I'm alliterating. magical. Okay, what else is on the agenda coming up? And we'll review all of this once more.
Yeah, this one isn't an event per se, more of something that we're trying to do and see if the community is interested in it. We have, for the last couple of weeks, been open late on Thursday evenings. So we're doing late nights at the museum every Thursday. We'll extend our hours. Instead of closing at 4, we will close at 7 p.m. And the goal is to make the museum more accessible to families and people who are working, people who can't make it in during our regular hours. We do also have the free first Saturday events once a month on the first Saturday of each month. Those free first Saturdays are free. The late nights at the museum, you would still pay admission, but the museum will be open late for you. So that's something we are committed to doing through May. We hope to extend that and make it a regular part of our operating hours. We're still trying to gauge interest.
And see what the response is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. I kind of have to smile when Hannah says late night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 7 o'clock, it's still sunshine and everything, at least at this time of year. Late night could be at another time of the year around the winter solstice, around 5:30 is late night. But
yeah, that's true. And that's something we will be looking at, whether we want to keep doing this in the winter, because I can attest that at 4 p.m. in the winter, it's pretty dark at the museum.
Exactly.
You know, no surprise there.
And you mentioned, I think, one of the pluses is that many parents work outside the home.
Exactly.
And this is a good time for parents and children to experience the museum, whereas if you have just regular hours, only retirees like me can go.
Mm-hmm. You know? There you go.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Cool idea, yeah.
Yeah, great. I hope it's a success. Really do. This is a great way to for a unit of people, a family can experience the wonderfulness of the museum.
Thank you. Yeah, that's the goal.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Hey, anybody who you don't have to have a family either. You just have
No.
Yeah.
Go to the museum before the you go out and have some drinks. Yeah. I mean, you know, start before at the museum. Before you go to the
drink history. Absolutely.
Yes. Have your early late night before the late, late night.
Exactly.
Are you and Annie planning on James?
This is the first I've actually heard of the late night at the museum.
Yeah, so he's got somebody he's grooming.
Now I'm thinking,
We're expecting you now.
Yes. Now he's two.
No, I've shamed
him.
I don't know.
I've shamed him.
Admission is always free for kids under six. So
okay.
There we go. Okay.
I'm gonna put that into the in the event planning committee for the household, and we'll see. See if that one gets taken up. That's a good idea. I also hope that's a success because that is fun too.
That's a neat idea. Mm-hmm. Just a neat idea.
What are your, at this time of year, what is your usual museum visitor like? Who is it, somebody from in town or out of town? I'm sure in the summertime you get a lot of out of town traffic, but.
Definitely. Yeah. I think in the shoulder season, we are seeing more local visitors, which is great. Mm-hmm. I don't want to sound biased, but they tend to be my favorite visitors when we mm-hmm. have locals come in. And at this time of year, we're also doing a lot of school tours. So we have teachers typically in the third to sixth grade age range from all over the county who bring their students in to tour the museum. We have trained docents who guide them around, and we have some little demonstrations and activities that they get to participate in. So that's a big part of our visitor pool at this time of year. We're also starting to see the Lakeview Park wake up from its winter slumber. So we're starting to see a lot of kids out on the playground, and a lot of times they tend to trickle in and check out the exhibits as well.
If a teacher is interested in arranging, a visit to the museum, how does that person go about it?
Yeah, the easiest way is through our website, again, at bonnercountyhistory.org. We have an education tab.
Perfect.
And through that, you can fill out a really easy form that gives us all of the details and your proposed dates and the size of your group and that type of thing. And then we get that information and we will call you to confirm a tour with you. So it's pretty simple.
And does it have to be within the school district or can it be from Priest River or wherever?
Yeah, we do provide tours all over the area. If you're able to travel here, we will certainly do a tour with you.
Perfect.
And I do want to say those school tours are always free for the schools. So that's just a service we provide. There's no cost to the teachers or the schools, which is pretty unusual for field trips. So we're happy to do that. We do also schedule group tours for adults as well. So that's something that you can schedule if you have a group that's or a club that's interested in visiting.
And also we have homeschool kids who are homeschooled.
Oh, good point. Good point.
You know, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good point.
Definitely.
Okay. What other exciting things happening at the museum?
Well, speaking of education, we are very excited. This is going to be launching at the end of the school year, but this is a program that is targeted more toward families and people who want to get a taste of that school tour experience without having a school group. So say you do have a few kids in a homeschool group, or you're just bringing your kids in to see the museum, this would be a good opportunity for you. We have partnered with the Avista Foundation, and they have provided funding for us to launch what we're calling our adventure packs.
I like the sound of it.
So our education committee has designed a really cool program in which each young visitor, when they come in, they will have the opportunity to put on an adventure pack. These are, they're technically fishing vests. So the kind of vests that have a million different little pockets in them.
Oh, what fun.
But instead of fishing lures, we've packed those pockets full of supplies that they will need to do different hands-on activities in each of our exhibit spaces. So, for example, one of the activities is learning how to use an Osborne firefinder. So these were tools that Some of the fire lookouts actually still use them. But when someone is in one of the fire lookout towers on top of a mountain and they're supposed to be scouting for forest fires, if they see smoke or they see a sign of a fire, it's this big rotating disc that's situated in the middle of the fire tower. And they'd be able to point the sight on that toward the smoke. And then based on a lot of fancy math things that I don't understand, the surface of the firefinder disc has a map on it. They can reference that map and tell exactly where that smoke is coming from. So that's an activity that someone more knowledgeable than myself will be teaching the kids how to do in one of these activities. We'll have a little tiny fire painted on one of the walls in the room. And so they'll get to spin the firefinder around until they locate it and then learn how to use the map.
What ages are you talking about here?
Yeah, we've designed this program to be for ages about 6 through 12.
Okay.
Some of the activities would be doable or interesting to kids outside of that range, but it'll mostly be that elementary age group that this
is. Now, is this a one-trip visit to the museum with all the little pockets in the vest, or?
So that's kind of the fun thing. We wound up with 16 activities. So you could certainly stay and do it all at once. It would probably take a couple of hours, but that is the idea, that you can do a few activities and then come back on another visit, do a few more. And what we're doing is, for each kid, there are a few things from the pack that they'll be able to take home. One of those is going to be a bracelet. And this is based sort of on the idea of a trade that would have taken place at the fur trading posts, but thinking about trade beads. So they'll have a bracelet with beads on it. They'll get a certain number of beads based on how many activities they've completed. And then if they want to add to their bracelet, they can come back and do more activities. So it's something that you could do in one visit if you're really ambitious, or you could stretch it out into several visits. We will also be evaluating the program each year, possibly adding new activities and things like that.
Is this the first year?
Yeah.
It'll be new.
Yeah,
brand new.
It'll be launching in mid-May.
Okay. And so... so it's just not a babysitting service where you drop off your kids. It would be useful if parents could go along and learn how to spot forest fires, true.
Correct. And I do think probably for that, 9 to 12 year age, kids could probably do this self-guided. For the younger kids, it typically would probably work best if they have a parent to help them with some of the activities.
Cool. You're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY.
Should we take a break and play a tune?
It's kind of what I was thinking.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about back in 1955, a musician by the name of Bo Diddley performed for the first time at the Apollo Theater in New York City. And if you don't know Bo Diddley, you just don't know Diddley. I mean, he had a rectangular guitar, which was really interesting, the shape of it. Mm-hmm. But one of my favorites growing up is Bo Diddley's A Gunslinger. But we're going to do the song called Bo Diddley, which he is well known for. Here on 88.5 KRFY, this date in 1955, he appeared for the first time on the Apollo Theater stage.
Don't let it decide, baby, diamond ring. If that diamond ring don't shine, he gonna take it to a private eye.
That is Bo Diddley. He appeared on the stage of the Apollo Theater in New York City, premiered for the first time on this date in 1955. And we're in the studio with Hannah Combs and, not Hannah Combs, yes,
yeah.
Hannah Combs and Jen Plummer. You know, I'm so Bo Diddley'd out. From the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. I just love that, society and museum. And we're talking about all sorts of wonderful things, particularly educational aspects of the museum.
Yeah, I wanted to also let folks know that at the museum we have these really cool trunks that can be checked out by any teacher in the district or any homeschool teachers. They're really cool. We've got four different themes to the trunks. One is Native Americans, Native American history of the area, mining, archaeology, and then another trunk on Captain Markham. Can you tell us a little bit about Cap Markham, Hannah?
Yeah, he is just a classic Bonner County character. He moved here when he was a child with his family, and there's a pretty harrowing account of his parents and all of the kids in this little rowboat going down the Pend'Oreille River to get to a town that was there before Laclede, called Séniaquitine. And you can still technically go to Séniaquitine today. There is a cemetery there, but the town has largely kind of disappeared. Anyhow, they wound up taking this rowboat to Séniaquitine. At the time, there were a number of Kalispell families staying there, and the Markham family established a ferry crossing. Now, this was around the time that gold mining was booming in Canada, and there was this trail that developed called the Lost Horse Trail. The easiest way to get from the south side of the river, if you were coming from the Spokane area up to Canada, was to cross here at Séniaquitine. And so the Markham family had a ferry there that was really successful. Cap grew up learning how to tan hides with the Kalispell people who lived there. He was really creative and just tried his hand at a whole bunch of skills. He eventually wound up building some of the mail boats that ferried mail around the lake to Hope and Sandpoint and Bayview and some of those towns. So he was a very adventurous spirit. He kind of got his hands in on everything going on in the area. And these were the days when there wasn't a lot here, when Bonner County and Sandpoint and Séniaquitine and Laclede and all of these towns were developing into, from basically a few settlers into what we know today. So
what year was it, or what years were?
Yeah, so this would have been in the 1880s, right when the railroads were first coming into town. But before the railroads, you could only get around by boat if you wanted to cross the river or the lake.
When was the first bridge? Do you know? When did the
now
ferry
you're
go
testing obsolete? My I know, knowledge. Sorry. So the ferry, someone will fact check me on this. I think the Laclede Ferry, as it became known, was actually in operation into the 1950s, which is kind of surprising. Yeah, yeah. Because the first railroad bridge to Sandpoint was built in 1882. And at that point, once rail travel developed, and then later when automobiles came in, that really limited the number of people who were taking ferries to cross the river.
Right. But cool to take a ferry in the, or around here anyway.
Wouldn't it
you
be?
Can, yeah. Oh. You can still catch a ferry out in Seattle if you want to. There are some ferries still in operation, even in the eastern part of Washington State. I think,
Well, I think of the one up in Canada going across Kootenai Lake from Balfour to something or other, the longest free ferry in the Northern Hemisphere? And you see glaciers and stuff like that. It's wonderful. We could just move it down here.
Well, so that is just one of these four trunks. And I mean, as Hannah just told, this is fascinating stuff. And so the trunks are filled with pieces of artifacts or tools that were used at the time for whatever industry we're talking about. And again, you can dive deep into Cap Markham in a really experiential, tactile way with your students.
Perfect.
And so, you know, give us a call. Take out one of these trunks. Your kids are going to love it.
Yeah, just to stay on the Markham trunk, again, it's really fun because there are, like you said, artifacts. These are things that the students can actually handle, so they can hold them, they can feel the textures and get a real understanding of what those were and how they would have been used. The Markham trunk is actually really cool, too, because we worked with a voice actor who did a recording as if it's in Cap Markham's voice. So they get a little bit of that flavor of the character based on Cap Markham's real memoirs.
Cool. Excellent. And how many trunks?
We have four trunks.
Four trunks.
And okay. Again, it's a trunk related to the Native American history in the area, which is so rich. Mining, archaeology, and the Cap Markham trunk.
And again, what would you said give you a call? Would one call a phone number?
Yeah.
What number would one call to say, I'd like to come over and get the mining trunk or the Native American trunk?
Of course. You can call the museum directly. The number there is 208-263-2344. And we do that sort of like a library checkout. Your classroom will be able to check it out for a month, and then you would be expected to come back and drop it off for the next class to enjoy.
Neat idea.
Mm-hmm. You have here on our list of upcoming events an exhibit at the Priest River Library, which I think we're going to be talking to them in May as well before it arrives. So we can go into detail at that time.
Hannah and
We're talking with Megan Mize from Library on May 11th.
Okay.
Yeah, so we just wanted to give a little shout out to our friends over at the Priest River Library. This is a huge opportunity and a really big deal that they were able to get this exhibit. It is a traveling exhibit from the Smithsonian.
That's right. That's right.
I remember. It's called the Spark Exhibit, and it will talk about innovation in rural communities. The Priest River Library is the first stop on their national tour. So,
whoa.
Very exciting. And we're really thrilled to be able to support our friends over there in, you know, them bringing this to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that will open on May 19th. That's a Friday.
Mid-May. And how long? Do you know how long it'll be there?
I believe it's there for 6 weeks before it goes to its next stop.
And if one goes to the museum's website, one can gather information?
You know, we will certainly be doing that. We don't have anything up there yet, but we will definitely put a link to their information on our website.
Briefly talking about exhibits, but this is one that's been up over at Evans Brothers. Can you give a framework for that? Because that is just amazing.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, this is a sort of a passion project for me. I worked on it with a few colleagues. Emily Erickson, you probably are familiar with her column in The Reader. Reed Weber is an architect with North Root Architecture. And Cynthia Dalsing is a very active community member. The four of us worked on a project that culminated in an exhibit that's now up at Evans Brothers. This was inspired when the El Sasser homestead was torn down in 2021. We had the opportunity to go out and document the site before the homestead house and barns were torn down. And it inspired us to learn more about that property, which developed into this kind of a bigger picture conversation and a deep dive into some of the themes that are going on in our community about development in general, about how historic preservation fits into that conversation, about how we save some of the stories of our community before they disappear. So we did all of that through the lens of this one specific property, and the exhibit at Evans Brothers is sort of set up like a timeline that traces it from the earliest days before settlers were here, through the lives of the El Sasser brothers and then the Rasco family that followed them up until its demolition, and then what we can learn from all of this.
And how long will that exhibit be up?
Yeah, just a little bit longer. It comes down on May 2nd.
Okay, grab a cup of coffee and just take your time and walk around at Evans Brothers. We're here at 88.5 KRFY with Hannah Combs and Jen Plummer, both from the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. And Jen, let's talk about your role as fundraiser. What do you do?
Well, we have, in addition to the events that we've just talked about. You know, we're doing a lot of promotion on these events, is what we're doing here today. And we're actually reaching out to folks, especially with our train event and the Gary Eller event, people who might be interested in that kind of thing, just getting out there and promoting this. These are unique events that just are not going to come around very often. So we want to just get our community out there. And then we're looking to the future. We've got some really cool things happening that we really want to, again, promote, bring that's kind of my role, is bring folks in, not only to the support the museum, but also to enrich their lives. That's really, you know, a big part about it. Learning our history, it's such a very I don't know, Hannah. It's just so vast. you can tell just by Hannah's knowledge and how interesting these stories are. So coming up toward the end of the year is really huge. We have had our Women Who Shaped Bonner County exhibit, which is our temporary exhibit. As you probably know, we have many permanent exhibits at the museum, but the temporary exhibit has been there for several years now. And so it's quite an endeavor to change that out. That's happening at the end of this year. We're going to have a couple of different events, one which will be saying goodbye to that incredible exhibit. And if you haven't seen the Women Who Shaped Bonner County exhibit, please come and see it. It is fascinating. My time working at the museum, which was short, but in all of that, but I'm there again, you know, all the time, but I still have not read and seen all of the things there are to see in this one exhibit. And it's coming down at the end of this year, and I'll have Hannah explain what our new exhibit will be. But again, my work is to promote and get our community members to come and enjoy these very unique events.
Well, one thing we haven't done in all of our, you know, that's great work, Jen, location. We haven't said where the location of the museum is, which is important.
Yeah, so we are in a very cool little nook in South Sandpoint. If you have visited Lakeview Park, you know
next to Veterans Field.
Exactly. So if you've ever been at Memorial Field for an event, we are sort of the backyard of Memorial Field. If you drive by, we're at the corner of Ella and Ontario, and you'll see our big yellow caboose out on the lawn. That's sort of our calling card. You can't miss it if you drive by. So that's where we are. Our address is 611 South Ella Avenue, if you want to look that up on your smart little pocket device.
Thank you.
Find us.
And in the summertime, which is really right around the corner, you guys are hosting some walking tours around town, I take it?
Yeah.
Around the area?
Yeah. Right. So this is a project that we are working like mad to finish developing. We're very excited to be doing this, though. We will be doing weekly tours from June through August, every Wednesday and Saturday at 11 a.m. And those will meet outside the Museum Guild gift shop on First Avenue in Sandpoint. So that's right next to the Panada Theater. We'll be meeting at the Museum Guild. We'll do a walking loop through downtown, and then we'll end up back at the Museum Guild at the end. So we are working on one program that will be more general history, and then we're working on another one that will be specifically, it'll be interesting to everyone, but specifically interesting to kids, we're hoping. So
cool.
We're going to be trying to do a program for kids about all of the strange and curious animals that have lived in Sandpoint. So we've got some stories of pet bears. We have some trained deer. We've got all kinds of interesting animal stories to share. And then the more general history tour, we're calling our newcomer cucumber tour. And this is based on a little anecdote we found in the newspaper where someone referred to all of the newcomer cucumbers who are moving to town. So we just wanted to, this tour is for those of you who might be visiting town, who maybe have moved here recently, or some of the old timers who want to maybe learn something new or tell us something that we don't know about. So it's open to everyone. We'll be sharing all the stories that you're going to want to tell your friends afterward.
I've been sharing a picture when you mention animals. Yeah, isn't it cute? We were in the yard over the weekend, and when you start moving leaves and bricks and logs, you find little creatures. And someone, I put this up on Facebook, and they identified it's a long-toed salamander. And it's just a wee little thing.
Yeah.
And this is about, it's inland northwest, and this is about the farthest east it goes.
Huh.
And so, you know, when you mention, there's a whole world out there.
Very camouflaged, too. Very cool colors.
Yeah.
And that's kind of neat when we're, you know, doing a walking tour and walking through downtown Sandpoint. We are exploring sort of an urban landscape.
Yes.
But it is important to remember that there are lots of creatures that live here with us, whether they are pets or, you know, trained bears or some of our native friends like your salamander there.
One of my favorite pictures of downtown is a moose at the corner of Main and First Avenue, right by Pedro's, I think, the boutique there. Just, you know, just shopping. Just wonderful. It has been great having both of you here, Jen Plummer, Hannah Combs.
Thank you.
Anything in closing that just lots of good things happening at the museum?
Come visit us. We are open late tonight until 7 p.m., so stop by. It'll be a good time. And yeah, we're open 10 to 4 Tuesday through Friday. And we'd love to see you there.
Thanks to both of you for all that you're doing to make this community incredible. You know, I mean, you're in our list of wonderful people who are doing great things. And we appreciate both of you.
Thank you so much for having us this morning.
Okay, we're going to play a song as we exit out on this date in 1964. Elvis Presley's one of his probably most popular movies premiered, Viva Las Vegas. And here's the title cut from that film.
Bright light city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. There's a thousand pretty women waiting out there. They're all living the devil may care, and I am just a devil with love to spare. So viva Las Vegas, viva Las Vegas. How I wish that there were more than 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more, I wouldn't sleep a minute away.